Today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra at only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Player of the Week coming up later in today's episode. And let me hit you with the only beat we need. Spencer, the entrepreneur Dinwiddie. He set the expectations for what his contract should look like, where his market value lies, and Doug and I get into it. What do we think the Nets should be willing to spend, including the luxury tax, to retain the services of one Spencer Dinwiddie? We love him. He's a fan favorite. But how does he fit into the landscape of guards around the league? And how do you value a player like this on a championship caliber team? It's all coming up right after the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast and the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day, rolling through the summer. I'm Doug Norrie. Got you covered over there on DFSR as the lead basketball analyst with all the projections you need for FanDuel and DraftKings. And that is Adam Armbrecht, the voice of the Brooklyn Nets on Sportscaster, and also the host of the One Giant podcast, getting you ready for the season for the New York Football Giants. Buddy, how are we doing? Are we ready to talk some hot contract stuff?
Oh, baby. Am I just brimming at the top of the cup here about the idea? Listen, as the world turns, I think that's a soap opera tagline. But every day that goes by, or every couple of days that goes by, it feels like something new comes out around the Nets, around potentially what they're going to do this offseason, what they could do. And then specifically around a player that we've brought up and we've talked about, lamented his absence during the year, and that's Spencer Dinwiddie.
Yeah, we've been rolling through the offseason. We've been asking, you know, going through the questions the Nets had to answer for every player. We covered at length the big three and, you know, what needing to sort of extend them. We thought at the beginning of August, that was a big important part. We did a long run about Joe Harris and where the Nets kind of stood with him after his postseason performance compared to the regular season performance and the contract and all that stuff. And we did talk about, you know, at length about what the Nets should do with Spencer Dinwiddie as he turns down his player option and then heads toward free agency. And, you know, I thought we covered it pretty well. There was a lot of implications. We talked about the sign and trade. But then Dinwiddie late last week went on the Howard Beck podcast, The Crossover, and discussed that at length in a really honest and kind of detailed fashion about his expectations around free agency, kind of in a way that you really don't hear players. I gotta say, Dinwiddie is super refreshing when it comes to stuff like this, because he's not a full faucet when it comes to spilling everything out, but he definitely talks more openly about just his situation, financial stuff, investments, all this other stuff, in a way a lot of other basketball players and really, frankly, just people in general don't. But he got pretty detailed on the Beck podcast about what maybe the Nets fans and / the Nets can expect for what it's going to take for him in free agency here.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we discussed last week that idea of what's the best option for the Brooklyn Nets when it comes to Spencer Dinwiddie, just from a team building standpoint. And the sign and trade may afford both the organization and the player to get where they want to be and also get some value in return for someone that you're not going to be able to retain. But on the podcast, when he was speaking with Howard Beck, he does basically lay it out in a way, to your point, he's also just being direct. This is what's feasible. And the first thing that I took away too was, and you could say whether or not this is trying to stay on in the good graces of all parties, but to paraphrase, Dinwiddie said, just because I opted out, it doesn't mean that going back to the Nets is off the table. We all look at the money and say that obviously the Nets are going to need to move on from him because of luxury tax implications, and we can touch on that in a little bit. But he said that he thinks his full max coming from the Nets, to quote him here, this is very much in the Nets' hands, and I think my full max is a 5-year, $196 million or something like that. Nobody is sitting here saying I'm going to make five for $196. So before anybody tries to kill me, nobody's saying that. But the Nets can offer him something in the range of, as he goes on to say, you know, $25 million a year, right? Five for 125. That would be a high likelihood, as Dinwiddie puts it, that he'd come back to the Nets. Now, on the surface, you say, okay, he is being very honest and forthright about what would work for him and why the Nets can very much be in the mix here. And also, it's easy just to say, I don't need the $200 million. $125 is more than enough for me, knowing what the Nets' financial situation is and what other things they may need to accomplish in the offseason. So, I mean, do you take that as being an indication that Dinwiddie legitimately wants to come back, or is this just more him, rightfully so, kind of sending it out to the rest of the league of, this is the expectations of what it's going to take to get my services, whether or not it's a sign and trade, or if you come after me in clear free agency?
Yeah, I think he's laying it out pretty clearly. It's a little bit of a leverage play because he's kind of admitting that he's not asking for the sun, the moon, and the stars, right? I think he's very much saying, I understand what my value is on the basketball court. I've looked around the league for the other comps. The math is actually pretty easy on this when it comes to what the number should be. And at that point, I think he's coming out ahead of it and saying, I want to set the expectation for everybody that this is kind of what I'm looking for. I don't think that is something he probably needed to do in a public forum. The agents are perfectly capable of, you know, conveying this to other teams, right? So it's not like Dallas Mavericks were listening to this and be like writing it down, be like, we got the number. Like, they're just gonna know, they're gonna know the number when, right? They're like, yes, we got it. No, it's like they're gonna know the number when his agent, you know, ask for that number. So I don't think
I told you it wasn't going to be $4 million, Carl, you idiot.
Yeah, right. Someone call accounting. So I think from that point of view, it's not like he's letting on some secret number that other NBA players don't. I find it interesting to have it walk through a process for an NBA player to show you, like, hey, I know what I could, like, they're just being very clear about the numbers. I know what I could get, like, you know, by definition, and he's very quick to say, I don't think, I'm not going to ask for that, what, 5 for $196, so no one need to worry. I just know that that is the max that I could get, but I'm not going to ask for that because that's not realistic. Here's what I do find realistic, and I think he wants to get out ahead of the part where sort of, and I got to say, we kind of did this ourselves when we talked about the Spencer Dinwiddie situation last week, where we kind of said it was sort of a foregone conclusion that he wouldn't come back because the number would be too high. That was, I mean, I don't want to speak for you, bud, but that was pretty much what I was saying at the time. And I'm sure others had too, Nets fans also. And I think Dinwiddie here is also getting out ahead of that kind of conversation and saying, hey, pump the brakes, everybody. I can come back, right? Like, the number is not so crazy that I can't come back, especially if we're going to open it up and be willing to just pay everybody, Joseph Tsai. Does that make sense? So I think that's the part where he's kind of coming out specifically with the number.
Yeah, I think, to your point last week, it may be because, as you and I have said, you don't go spending other people's money, right? Well, Joseph Tsai, you got a lot more money than I do, so just go ahead and keep writing these checks. And I think that that's the perspective that we come from, where you say at a certain point there is a threshold that you just can't go beyond. And, you know, I will say, when you talk about bringing him back, there's another comment. I'll hold off on the luxury tax piece for a minute here. The other thing that he mentions in this is, if the Nets were going to come to the table and say, oh, we'll go 3 for $60, well, anybody can do that. And it's true. Anyone could make that offer for him. But then I think the subplot here is, what if whatever the contract looks like is not what the expectation is? What if it's not going to be the equivalent of 5 for $125, because the Nets can go the extra year that other teams can't? Okay, but what if the average annual is somewhere lower than the mark that Dinwiddie is trying to set for himself? If all things are equal, I don't know that he's automatically then going to come back to the Nets, right? Like, this is a in tandem kind of piece here. If we can get to the number that I'm looking for, and rightfully so, by the way, we're going to get some comps later on here that make this very reasonable, the expectations that Dinwiddie is setting. But if you're going to go to 5 for 125, then I'm very interested in coming back to the Nets, because I feel like I'm getting valued where I should be, and I get to come back and be a part of probably the odds-on favorite to win the championship next year. So everything feels great there. And not terrible for your brand. You're in a large market being in Brooklyn. But if the Nets come to the table with, as he laid it out, 3 for $60, right? What if a few other teams all come in around a number similar to that? Is Dinwiddie then going to pick the Nets over other options on the table? What is the difference between 60 versus 65, or, you know, whatever the numbers may be between the Nets and another location? And is that automatically going to sway Dinwiddie's decision? Because, as we say, not to get into other people's pockets, an extra $5 million is an extra $5 million. And this does represent possibly the last big payday for Spencer Dinwiddie, depending on how things go over the length of this contract. So, you know, there are still other factors involved with it. I think he set the floor for himself, and that's a smart thing to do. Now, I'd love to hear other GMs around the league come out on Howard Beck's podcast and be open and honest when they say, this is where we value him, this is the number we'd like to spend on him, and then we'd really get a sense. So if I could just get clarity from the entire league overall, it would help me kind of form my opinion on what's going on with Dinwiddie.
Yeah, for sure. Ed, with that in mind, with Spencer Dinwiddie asking for the bag, be very honest, knowing his value, doing all the things you want to see when a player is in negotiations. We're going to make him the Michelob Ultra Player of the Week. He was hurt this season, but it doesn't seem to be hurting his value. And we know that when Spencer Dinwiddie is on the court, he's playing with all the joy, happiness, and enjoyment you want to see out of a guy, especially a guy that could come back here to the Brooklyn Nets. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. Only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. Joy creates success. Enjoyment isn't the end game, it's the whole game. Spencer Dinwiddie, go get it, son. You are the Michelob Ultra Player of the Week.
And of course, man, I gotta tell you, don't let the stress of daily life weigh on your body. Whether you're an elite athlete or someone like me just trying to make it through the day, the tension-free day that I'm looking for, Theragun can help. Theragun is the handheld percussive therapy device that releases your deepest muscle tension using scientifically calibrated combo of depth, speed, and power, and it's as quiet as an electric toothbrush. The Gen 4 Theragun doesn't just feel good, it gets to the source of the pain by releasing tension using Theragun's signature percussive therapy, which goes 60% deeper than and vibration alone. Whether you want to treat your muscle tension from working out, an injury, or just the stresses of everyday life, there's no substitute for the Theragun Gen 4. The OLED screen and design make you feel like you're holding something from the future. Just go to their site and check it out, and the Theragun app learns from your behaviors and suggests guided routines along the way. Theragun is trusted by 250 professional sports teams like Real Madrid and elite athletes like Paul George, DeAndre Hopkins, Maria Sharapova, and hundreds of thousands of customers, plus me, yours truly, Adam Armbrecht. And you can try Theragun for 30 days starting at only $199. Go to Theragun.com/LockedOn right now and get your Gen 4 Theragun today. That's Theragun.com/Theragun.com/LockedOn. So when we talk about Spencer Dinwiddie and setting the table here and the expectations, there's two things. First piece is going to be the, just to put it out there, the luxury tax implications. So we can talk about the idea of 125 and the fifth year and all those things. But even if Spencer Dinwiddie were just to sign an average annual $18 million contract for the Brooklyn Nets, the luxury tax goes from $40 million to $114 million. So then that's coming off of former assistant GM Bobby Marks. When you think about that number, this is where we said, I'm not trying to get in someone's pocket, but there's no way that $74 million is not an impact. Like, there's no way that Joe Tsai looks at that and goes, that's all right. I know he's worth a lot of money, but that's not chump change. And I think that then plays into the factor of what is the return on investment? What is Spencer Dinwiddie's value to this team and to the championship run? And maybe you can put a dollar amount on that, or you can look past any dollar amount and say he's far more valuable here with us and what we're capable of doing than anything we're going to get back in return, anything we're going to do in the future. Do you look at him as being that crucial of a player inside of what the Nets want to do? Because, and I'm not talking either side of it. Like, I'm curious to see how you look at him relative to what the Nets could put behind James Harden and Kyrie Irving for next season.
Yeah, okay, so a couple things. One is that number that's reported by Bobby Marks is a huge number, because it means that, right, you need to start thinking about his contract in a different way. It's not just, I should just have done the math on this better, but it's not just, let's say, you know, five for, you know, $18 million a year, it actually goes up to like something like, it's like you're attacking on like $5 more million just in luxury tax for on his salary that you don't pay, that you don't pay him. You just pay back to the league. So it becomes, it's not a one for $1 thing at this point.
Right.
It's like I'm spending 50 extra cents on the luxury tax for every dollar that I spend or something like that. Right. So, and that can really have a huge impact, as we see. So it is one of these things you mentioned before, like, okay, I don't want to spend someone else's money for sure. And I don't think that there should be you shouldn't look at anyone's value or worth or bottom line or pocket and say, oh, you can do this, because no one in their current situation would just go spending money that they didn't have, right? Or that just didn't really want to, right? Because, and it doesn't matter if it's, you know, $70 million for a basketball team or $7 for an extra movie ticket, right? Like, it's just all that money is relative to compared to what someone else has. And you really shouldn't be in the practice of saying, oh, you should just do it because you have it. Because almost nobody, anyone, I'll tell you right now, anyone that says that doesn't operate that way themselves, 100%. So,
it's like the very baseline, walk into a coffee shop, you buy a cup of coffee, you put $3 down on the counter, and then you throw $1.50 on the floor.
Or like, just like, or you have extra
even
20,
at that scale, you wouldn't do it.
You have extra 20 in your pocket, buy everyone a coffee. Oh, you didn't do that? Okay, so just be quiet. So don't, you know what I mean? So like, don't say, right. Don't say like that. That can't be your argument. Can never be, oh, he has it, so he should do it. That's just not, it's just not a good, especially for a team that's already in the luxury tax, right? So they're already going to do it. There's going to be a breaking point at which you say, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm not going to pay $1 billion in luxury tax, right? So once you...
By the way, this is, sorry, because your example is so good. This is where Joseph Tsai already walked in and bought everybody coffees. And now they're like, yeah, but buy the next 10 people coffees too.
Yeah, it's just like, well, I can't buy the whole world coffee, right? It's like at some point, and the way you can do this for yourself out there is to say, would you agree that $1 billion in luxury tax would be too much? Okay, yes. Well, then at that point, you agree that there is some kind of limit, right? So like once you come up within your head that there is some kind of limit, then great. It's not your decision to decide what the limit is. And that number is huge, right? Because you're, like I said, if you're spending an extra portion of luxury tax on every dollar you sign over the cap, then of course, then at some point, there has to be a breaking point. Okay, so that was the first thing. The second thing was, you mentioned about how, you know, is this worth it? See, I'm of two minds here on this one with Dinwiddie, because he's awesome. And I am just, it's been awesome to watch him. He's a big part of why the Nets, you know, maintained a level of competency in the league that allowed, I think, other players to go in and say, hey, look what they have going on here. This is like a really competent team. Guys like him and LeVert and Kenny Atkinson were like such huge critical parts of this. I mean, Marks too. I was just talking about the on-court stuff. But the, you know, being able to look at the Nets and say, hey, look at this team. They kind of have together. They're scrappy. They're kind of playing a punching above their weight. They're doing more than they should with the personnel that they have. Like, Dinwiddie was a absolute crucial component for that. And it was definitely robbed of him, the ability to go and showcase what he could be with the rest of this group, you know, once he got hurt and wasn't even around with the Harden thing. So this is a long way for me to say, I think Dinwiddie deserves the money that he's asking for sure. And when we look at the comps, we're going to say, yeah, like that's, he's got the right number in his head for sure. It's just one of these weird things where it's like, I just don't know if he's just the guy for this team, because for that number, I kind of have to feel pretty confident that he's going to be on the court in crunch time of like a playoff game or a championship game. And short of injuries to one of these three guys, which would have happened in the Bucks series, right, with Kyrie, he would have been out there. But if they're not hurt, then I just don't know if he's on the court. You know what I mean? And so it becomes really close.
It makes it hard.
Yeah, it just becomes really close.
And do you think that... would him having been healthy this year, if you had gotten a sample size with Kyrie or with Harden and, you know, with KD, with everything going on, obviously I think you would have seen him if the script plays out this way and there's these injuries in the playoffs, then he would have been on the court too. But do you think that, I don't want to say it's not from the outside, like would the Nets be viewing him differently if they had gotten the sample size? And let's say that, Like we've seen with a lot of other players on the Nets, you benefit from having the superstars there. If he looked even better than he has to this point as a Brooklyn Net, does that influence the Joseph Tsai and the Sean Marks of the world to say, hey, this tells us that we definitely need to bring him back? Or do you think that they as Doug Norrie likes to say, they solve the science on this, that we know what Dinwiddie is. We know what he can contribute. This really does just come down to the dollars and cents and where else we might spend that money, how far we're willing to go over the tax, all those other things, because on the back end, we're going to get into players like Jeff Green and Bruce Brown and, you know, all these other guys, Blake Griffin as well. But remember, a move like this then also pushes you over that threshold deeper and sets you up to be further over the threshold if you need to bring back or make any other moves as well.
Well, I think there, I think that he didn't play is the only reason we're having the conversation, because we would just know, you know, like we would know. And so I think that the whole question mark around this is that he just wasn't on the court, is that we have the full sample size of what he was like without that group, and it was good. And then we have no sample size at all with who was like that with the group. And then this is the impossible part of it. We don't know. I think, yeah, if he had played, I tell you right now, we wouldn't be on our second or third podcast about this. it's the very question mark of having not played on the team that raises all the questions of, well, we just don't know until you're making this commitment to a thing that. And it's one thing to make a commitment to, like, short-term commitments around money to guys like Jeff Green or Blake. It's like, okay, well, the money's low, he's a veteran, the risk is pretty low, the reward isn't that high, but it's unlikely to kill you, right? And this is why, like, the Joe Harris contract becomes one of these question marks too. It's like, well, did they overpay? And, like, did they, you know, whatever. This is why fans get kind of much more wrapped up in situations like that than they do in some of the other lower-level guys. But with Dinwiddie, you'd be committing to, you know, if he's asking for the 5 years, you're committing to 5 years. That would put him around this. If the Nets re-sign the big three, that would put him on the same timeline as those guys, right? And at that point, you kind of have to know that it works, right? Yeah. And it's gonna work because he's good. So it's not like that's not gonna work. Like, they're gonna be awesome regular season team, all that other stuff. It's just that when it gets down to brass tacks, is he worth it? This is a hard one, man. You can hear me stumbling. Well, hold on. Let's get into some of these comps here in 1 second too, because maybe that will help. That will, like, sort of crystallize what our thought process is on this. I got to talk to you first about our friends over at Rock Auto. Oh my goodness, the makes and the models and the cars out there, it can be impossible to try to figure out what you need for your car. And if you go to the local chain auto parts store, they can be a combination of sort of like unhelpful and mysterious when it comes to what you need. They come out, they go into, disappear into the cavern of parts, come back with an unmarked box. You're hoping that it's the right part, but you're not totally sure. None of that is a problem when you use Rock Auto. You spend 30 or 50% less than those local chain stores. Forget about the car dealerships and the mechanics too. No way you can get a better deal than those. Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. Reliably low prices for every single customer. Have everything you need. Brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpets. Right now, go over and use their easy-to-navigate menu. Drag down for make and model of your car, and you're going to see every part you need. And all you have to do when you go to rockauto.com, once you see all the parts that are available, write in Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box. They'll know that we sent you amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com.
All right, so let me just make it clear here too. From a pure Brooklyn Nets fan standpoint, I love Spencer Dinwiddie. I love to have him back. He's well worth $25 million a year, in my opinion. And the reason why is because when you look around the league, and one last little caveat, I think that if Dinwiddie had played this past season and had been healthy, there's a world where these numbers we're talking about annual, maybe you're not going to get to the 5 years or whatever, but that the number was going to look a lot larger for what it was going to cost to get his services back, because he may have elevated himself that much more playing along superstars and kind of, you know, establishing to the league, yes, I did a lot when the expectations were low and the Nets were a back end of the playoff team. Now on a championship caliber team, I also did it on the, you know, in the biggest games on the biggest stage. So now every other contending team, you can look at me if you need a point guard and say, we know that he's capable of that. But that being the case, when you look around, and we're excluding this just to the guards essentially, because that's where Dinwiddie's going to be playing anywhere. Well, let me ask you this first question here. Is Spencer Dinwiddie worthy of top 50 money in the league?
Oh, top 50? It's a random number. I'm not sure about that. You caught me off guard.
Okay.
With that.
Now here's why. Because the 50th highest paid player in the league right now is Victor Oladipo, right, making $21 million. You want to go up the list from there? Just ahead of him is Van Fleet, making 21.25.
Right.
A few spots up from there is Jaylen Brown making 23.7 million. And then these contracts are ones that are, in most cases are going to escalate from here going into next season. Buddy Hield out there for the Kings, he's making 24.7. And then you've got a player like Drew Holiday currently playing in the finals making $26.2 million. Where inside of that grouping of players does Spencer Dinwiddie fall? Because anywhere is going to be top 50, but you know, where does he line up among those guards around the league?
Yeah, so he's right in that range. I think there's another guy in there, Malcolm Brogdon, and he's...
He's outside the top 50. I couldn't do it. 20.7 million for Brogdon there as well.
Yeah, he's probably in that Brogdon range, I would say, like right around there, probably a little higher. The reason I brought up Brogdon is because Brogdon and he are actually the same age. They're both 28. And, you know, the different timelines in their contracts and stuff like that. So, because Dinwiddie's coming to this a little bit later than some of these other guys, because he's had a bet, he's like sort of getting better, you know, as it goes. So he's becoming more valuable over time. And Van Vliet's 27. So I guess like three in the same range. Yeah, I would say he's right in there. I think from a better player standpoint, I'd probably rather have, I don't even know. It's so close. They just all do different stuff. They all do slightly different stuff. And I'm probably a victim here of like having Spencer Dinwiddie having had a whole year off of me not watching him. So I'm probably being a little bit bearish. And I'm just fully admitting that. I you know, sometimes it's like this is what we talk about with Kevin Durant. It's like, oh, we took a whole year off from watching him and just kind of forgot that he was just the best thing ever, right? So best guy.
Well, how about this one? Because I went up the list a little bit here. How about, would you pay Spencer Dinwiddie $25 million if you knew that D'Angelo Russell was making 28.6 for the Timberwolves right now?
Yeah, see, this is what I mean. These guards, they're all kind of, They all fall into the same range. By the way, all these guards are good. It's not this. It's just that the Nets have two great guards. This is the only thing to really. Yeah. This is like the only reason I bring it up. The Nets have like two top 10 guys, like basically in the league in terms of, you know, wherever you want to put Kyrie. I hate doing this top 10 stuff, but like they have two of the best, let's just say this, they have two of the top X best guards in the list, and the number is small, guards in the league already in the team, right? And so you can play three guards on your team, and it's really important to have guys like this. As we just saw, it would have been really nice to have Spencer Dinwiddie there playing when Kyrie got hurt, because they definitely, and Spencer Dinwiddie said this on the Beck podcast, that would they have made it through the second round? He was like, oh yeah, definitely. And he's right. We said that too. He said he's 100% right. They would have not lost to the Bucks. They just needed that extra guy that could dribble the ball for, you know, 10 extra minutes, or, you know, well, he would have played a lot more, you know, 30 plus minutes, that was just kind of what they need. It's nothing about that. He's got the right number in his head. He and his agent, and by the way, he represented himself forever. And I just clicked off it. He actually signed an agent this year to like help with this process. Jason Cotter.
Smart.
Smart
move.
Yeah. So, he's not just doing, Jason Glushin. So he's working with an agent now, and he clearly has the right number in his head. They've looked at the comps. The comps are pretty easy. Like, we went through them right now. You said it, Van Vliet and Brogdon and, you know, guys like this. And so it's just a matter of, is it worth it for the Nets to do it for possibly a redundant asset? Is it worth it to do it to send you a redundant asset that sends you way into the luxury tax for redundancy rather than maybe some other thing at the price of the other players that you kind of need, because this roster is far from full right now? And so
here's the thing for me. So there's a couple of parts here, but you just mentioned something. The first thing is, we've seen fans in general on social media have been like, man, just pay the man, you know, go into the luxury tax, pay this man, give him the bag. The first question is, again, excluding the fact that I love Spencer Dinwiddie and I wish that he could be a Net for life, do you think that could set up then Spencer Dinwiddie for, you know, the fans are all saying sign him, sign him, sign him, same way they said it about Joe Harris. Now, come to me in the playoffs, come to me late in the season. Now you're paying him $25 million. Now the fans are going to have expectations for him. Now there's going to be this benchmark of, by the way, the reason why we're saying pay you this money is so that in the spot when we need you, when someone's a little injured, when someone's dinged up, you have to come through because we're paying you $25 million. Like, it changes entirely the dynamic of how you feel about this player.
Sure.
And the mark that you set for him now when he gets on the court.
That's what I mean. Like, no one cared about Joe Harris not being able to hit threes until he got paid a big contract in the offseason and couldn't hit threes, right? Like, This is all the money recalibrates the fans and, frankly, the organizations too, feelings about what you should be doing. Once you get paid more, the expectations go up. That's why, that's what turns guys into like great or disappointments. You know, look at, and the list, you can look at either side of this list to see these guys that are like way outplaying their contracts, or guys that all of a sudden the money looks really weird. You know, guys like Siakam, guys like Andrew Wiggins, right? He's gotten a little better. Like these guys that are getting huge numbers, people only think of them as busts, not relative to what they're, well, maybe busts is strong. The people, you know, get worried about the performance, not relative to the actual performance, but relative to what they, what they're making, right? That's the only reason.
Yeah.
Well, like that's the only reason that they become more of the conversation, is because once you take the money, you invite more of the criticism. And that's, I guess that's fair. That's sports. That's what's going to happen. That would probably almost definitely be the case with Dinwiddie if he were to take it. I think that, again, the expectation is the performance. I'm really not worried about the performance. It's just that a chance to have the performance is my concern with him. And that's it. And I'm fine to be wrong about this. Like this is why you can hear me waffling about my decision. I'm not going to do hot take, be like, they should sign him or they should never sign him. I hate people that do that. Like, right. This is a nuanced situation that I can see both sides of.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like, you want to have the player just in case you need him, essentially. That's what, you know, same thing. But then if you need to use him, you want him to be playing at a high level. So I get it from both sides, but it's interesting the way fans feel about it and how quick they are to say you can't possibly be without him. But you mentioned the Joe Harris situation. Suddenly it goes, oh, but what I meant was I only really wanted you if I can set a threshold that I know you're going to meet every single time. The other piece to leave on a cliffhanger we can come back in on later in the week would be if the Nets are, and Josiah are willing to go into the luxury tax threshold that deep, and you're going to spend $25 million a year on a player, that's where you take the step back. And again, removing myself from loving Spencer Dinwiddie as a player and as a member of the Brooklyn Nets, then I go, well, guess what? I could probably name a lot of players at a lot of different positions for $25 million a year that would be more important and more valuable to this Brooklyn Nets roster. So, you know, then you, if you're going to open up the door to spend the money and go that deep, then my response is going to be, let me name some power forwards. Let me name some, you know, lengthy big men, some versatile 3-and-D guys that would be better suited to fill out this roster in support of the superstars going for a chip.
Yeah, and that's the flip side of the coin, right? And so I think, I've been not all over the place. I'm pretty steady on this is a very close call for us, I think, or yeah, for me. Like, it's just, it's a...
And I'm sure keep peppering you with scenarios, way. So I'm doing. I'll you tell no you right f- now, I'm doing you no favors.
And I'm gonna say no. It's all good. I love this stuff. I will say, just to reiterate, Spencer Dinwiddie is 100% right on the number that he's quoting.
Yes.
Like, I cannot say, I said this 5 times, and I just want to say to anyone else who will listen, you know, you, me, the clouds, and everybody else, like, it's this. He is 100% right on that number. Like, he has got it right. He's comped himself perfectly. Like, this is not, he's not asking for something that's like well outside the bounds of reality. No, that's, he's got the number right. It's only relative to the Nets situation now that it becomes a question mark. And teams like Dallas, teams like Miami, like these teams are, you know, possibly some of these teams in LA are interested in him. He's going to have suitors. It's not just going to be the Nets or bust. There's going to be other people that are going to come probably with numbers close to that. And in the end, I think Dinwiddie will get that number. It's just going to be a close call about, I think, whether it's the Nets that actually do it or not, or if it ends up becoming a sign and trade piece. All right, we'll be back again. We're going to answer some more questions about this stuff. We're talking about a guy whose value got played way up because he got to play the whole season, Bruce Brown, and now is looking at a contract, some number that's possibly much higher than we ever would have expected. We'll talk about him. We'll talk about USA basketball. We'll get into the Nets' new assistant coach. Got a ton of other stuff to talk about this week. You want to help the podcast, rate and review wherever you listen. Helps those numbers continue to grow there during the off season. Very appreciative that everyone that's stuck on board as we roll through the summer. Rate and review wherever you listen.
And plus, a Spotify green room at some point later this week. We'll let you know the day and time for that, probably tomorrow. But in the meantime, you can check out the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021, which is presented by Locked On and Odyssey. It features analysis from the GOAT of NBA mock drafts, Chad Ford, and Odyssey NBA expert Brian Scalabrine, plus former general manager Ryan McDonough. Our Locked On NBA local experts are making selections and trades for all your favorite teams, the Brooklyn Nets, throughout this week-long special event. You can search the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 on the new Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast needs fulfilled. Odyssey is your audio home for all the sports, podcasts, music, and news that matters to you. That's AUDACY. And friends, I'd like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love, grow apple trees and honeybees and snow white turtle doves. I'd like to buy the world a Coke. Bill Backer, spend some dollars.
Oh my goodness, one of the all-time great poets. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.